The Demon Sea.
Walker, you must be mistaken.
It's now, it's here.
Come on down here and help us.
Demon Sea.
Paranormal existence.
You mean to say you came here purposely?
The first move in the great conspiracy had been made.
Fucking turn it off. Off. Bastard. Right. Hang on, all the levels are wrong. Hang on. Jesus Christ. Oh, right. Hang on. It's going to sound horrible. Jesus. How fucking loud is that? Right, that's better. Better. Now, can you hear me? 1, 2, 3. Hello. My name is Dean Robards. Welcome to my world, children. For this is the beginning of the end. In many ways, it's always been the end. But don't worry, my friends. As you may well have noticed, at this point in the podcast, the three boys have failed to turn up. Not completely true. One of the boys is here through an alter ego, an alternate personality. He's bringing you a type of entertainment based on the type of entertainment you've been used to previously, which, of course, as we know, is, rather than being entertainment, a complete sack of shit. Excuse me while I imbibe some of my fluid. Nonetheless, I shall endure to entertain you for at least 15 to 45 minutes, or until I reach the point where I've given up and decided to turn this off, as you may well have done within the first 15 seconds of listening to this podcast. I would also like to mention that those of you who haven't listened to this podcast yet and aren't listening to this podcast are incredibly wonderful people. I commend you for not listening to this podcast. It's shit. I mean, plain and simple, it's just terrible. Absolutely fucking terrible. And there's no redeeming qualities whatsoever. I mean, the people that present it are bastards. It's full of absolute shit. It just goes on and on, the same shit in a different order. But at least this week it's a slightly different type of content. Not that much different. I mean, you'll still find things like this. Help me. You'll still find that, of course, and you'll find the meanderings of an idiot talking complete shit to you, but at least it will fill some time whilst you're driving your car or carrying out your mundane job or burying a dog, whatever you get up to. So let us begin. I thought I would try and find some what I call premium content. Content we normally say for those who pay for this podcast. But of course, this really isn't worth paying for. I've decided most of the people who contact us and speak about these podcasts often speak about complaints, complaining how it's terrible, how the quality's terrible, the audio quality's terrible, nobody turns up, the content's said, it's all shit. So I thought I'd delve into the world of complaint letters, and I found a rather wonderful complaint letter for you today, which I'd like to read courtesy of DearCustomerRelations.com, which is a website. It's a real website. You can visit the website anytime you like. Just feel to log in, have a look, see what you can find. And it's a compilation of fantastic complaint letters. And I found one that's rather interesting and right up the street of you wonderful Demon Seed podcast listeners. I shan't give you the title. I shall simply start at the beginning. I'm sure if Reese is listening to this before he puts it online to check for any true profanities or anything that's illegal, he will place some music over the top. I must say, recording these things makes me feel very much like Jim Morrison in that film, The Doors. Not that when Jim Morrison was in the film, The Doors, but of course, Val Kilmer playing the role of Jim Morrison in The Doors. The bit in the film where you see Jim as a bloated mess, trying to read his own poetry in a rather self-righteous way into a microphone over a bottle of Jack Daniels. There wasn't long left for him after that, was there? Well, I'm sure there's not long left for me either. For any of us, let's face it, we all end up 6 feet under. But anyway, I shall start my reading shortly. If you just bear with me while I wet the tubes. Reese, darling, if you could put some music on at this point, give it some sort of atmosphere. I mean, if you've got the opportunity, try and add some special effects at some point. Try and make the voices sound a bit more exciting than they actually are, because as we know, this is a complete horseshit. Here we go. Please excuse me if there are any mistakes. I'm not going to go back to try and edit this. I've fucking made one there. I doubt Reese will try and do anything to really redeem this, so let's just go with it and see what happens, and hopefully I can fill up enough time to apologize for the fact that none of us have bothered doing this fucking podcast properly this week. Here we go. Take it away, love. I would consider myself a prudent man. I'm not given to bouts of outspokenness or craving attention, and certainly not one to rock the boat. On any given day, I can be found reading a crime novel on a park bench in the middle of the city, soaking in the opulence of nature while nibbling on my tuna fish sandwiches and fending off the voracious gulls and squirrels that threaten to spoil my repose. This is me. Law-abiding and introspective. Which is why it came as a shock to me to find myself incarcerated because of the devil's confectionery. Satan's sweetmeat. Lucifer's lozenges. The horror that is known as Haribo sugar-free gummy bears. I shall set the scene. It was late winter, early spring in Toronto, and the city had just been digging itself out from a late-season snowstorm. I was heading to Pearson International Airport for a red-eye flight to Amsterdam in order to give the Dutch arm of our company some training on the new software that had been installed. I am deliberately being vague to prevent my place of work from being linked in any way to the incident that occurred. I just finished packing, checked the time, and found I was running late. My flight was at 7:10 and it was now almost 5 p.m. Cursing softly, I ran out to the car and threw my bags in the trunk, hitting the gas a little harder than usual in my haste to make it to the long-term pod. To make it to the long-term parking lot as soon as possible. Luckily, traffic was light on the 401 and I made it to the airport in record time, but I knew my chances of making the flight were still at risk if I didn't lose my time wisely. I hadn't eaten lunch, and I was feeling a bit hungry. My stomach rumbling loudly in protestation, which caused me to look around at the other travellers rushing past me in the busy terminal. Mortified that my bodily noises might be heard by others, I briskly checked my watch and decided that I'd had enough time to grab a quick snack before going through the baggage check and security, and decided to get myself something more substantial once I was airside. I spotted a vending machine nestled in a relatively low traffic corner of the terminal and rushed over. Already pulling out my credit card, mentally assessing what I had a craving for so as to save time interacting with the machine, my eyes scanned the colourful array of confection, quickly coming to rest on a tantalising rainbow-coloured bag of gummy bears. With the simple white and red logo, Haribo, emblazoned across the bag in what appeared to be a slightly tweaked Helvetica rounded font. Now, I'd like to pause here in the story for a moment to underscore the importance of making proper choices. I was hungry, and when you're hungry, you should eat food. Food is defined as a nutritious substance that people consume to maintain life. That is what food is. These days, the definition of the word food has been bastardized, and the meaning has been broadened to include veritably any material that can be ingested, or rather chewed, and swallowed without causing death or severe illness. Haribo sugar-free gummy bears are not food. They aren't even from this planet. I imagine their origins being conceived in a boardroom in hell by a top team of creative pain administrators, with senior-level demons rubbing their hands together in a ghoulish delight as hell's chief chemist slowly lifts the veil on their new creation. The point here being, I made a very, very, very poor choice. I pushed the button and the vending machine ejected the brightly coloured bag into my waiting hands. I'd always liked gummy bears. They were bright, but rather innocuous. They weren't overly sweet, so as to become cloying. And of course, each candy came in the visage of a rather happy, docile bear, reminiscent of the picture one's mind's eye holds of all anthropomorphic bears from Hyogi to Winnie. The way I figured it, I was taking a bit of a holiday from life, so I could relax my fastidiously regimented daily schedule to allow for some frivolity. After all, I was going to be in Amsterdam come morning with 16 hours to kill before I had to be training the Dutch employees. Maybe I would take a trip down to one of the coffee shops in the red light district and really let my hair down. No, I wouldn't do that. I would see that area of the city from the bus as I went to the hotel, where I would eat at the hotel restaurant and drink sparkling water. So I'd better enjoy the gummy bears, my one extravagance to commemorate my break from routine. I joined the queue in the KLM line, which was mercifully short, most likely because all of the passengers for my flight had already been checked through as it was scheduled to... Fuck that one up. Help me. Help me. Mary the Punk. Arthur Fowler. I joined the queue in the KLM line, which was mercifully short, most likely because all of the passengers for my flight had already been checked in through as it was scheduled... Fucked it up again. Help me. Reese, try and cut this bit out. Fuck it, don't bother. No one's listening anyway. Wish the others had turned up. They could have said something else at this point. Fill it in. Start again. I joined the queue in the KLM line, which was mercifully short, most likely because all of the passengers for my flight had already been checked through as it was scheduled to part. Maybe the punk. Mary the Punk. Help me. Help me. I joined the queue in the KLM line, which was mercifully short. Most likely because all of the passengers for my flight had already been chucked in. I joined the queue in the KLM line, which was mercifully short. Most likely because all of the passengers for my flight had already been checked through as it was scheduled to depart in an hour. I checked my watch again, frowned, and absentmindedly opened the bag of Haribo sugar-free gummy bears. I began to munch on them as the line slowly advanced. To be fair, they tasted fine, just like every other manufacturer's brand of the colourful candy, and... Help me! To be fair, they tasted fine, just like every other manufacturer's brand of the colourful candy, and they were sugar-free to boot. This is what made the whole incident that followed so very baffling. If they had tasted off or different, I most likely wouldn't have continued to shovel them into my mouth, absent-mindedly while daydreaming about what I would order to eat from room service in my hotel in Amsterdam. As I gave the attendant my e-ticket, she weighed my bags, and the first of the pains began in my stomach. I thought nothing of it at first, chalking it up to the fact that I needed something more substantial than gummy worms to tackle my hunger, but over the course of the next 5 minutes, the shooting pains began to come in more rapid succession. At this point, I had my boarding pass printed, and rubbing my stomach a little, I proceeded to security. I briefly entertained the thought of trying to find a restroom before I could go through, but at that point my discomfort was manageable, and I didn't think it was going to get any worse. Certainly not within the amount of time it would take to clear security. As I joined the line and started fishing for my passport to present to the agent checking tickets, I felt a thin sheen of sweat break out on my forehead and underarms. My features flushed for a moment as a wave of heat washed over me, and I didn't pay much heed as I was going through security, and that always caused me great anxiety, and I chalked it up to pre-flight jitters. It was only as I stood face to face with the agent and handed her my passport and ticket that I glimpsed the agony of what was about to begin. It felt like time rippled for a moment, as if my consciousness buckled, so intense was the pain that... Fucked it up again?
Start again, you fucking idiot. Show me your ball bag. Snips.
It felt like time rippled for a moment, as if my consciousness buckled, so intense was the pain that fired through my bowels. I grimaced spastically and emitted a low moan. And I felt myself take an involuntary step sideways. Stars shot through my head briefly, and my vision blurred and then snapped back into focus. The agent was staring at me with slight consternation and asked me if I was all right. I pulled myself together, stood up straight, and declared that I was fine, mortified that I'd had a lapse of decorum not only in public but at the security clearance in an airport. As I fumbled off my belt to go through the metal detector, the pain in my stomach increased and I practically had to sit on the floor to take my shoes off, terrified of what would happen if I bent at the middle to do so. It was becoming increasingly evident to me that this wasn't just a stomachache. No, this was something much, much worse. As a child, I'd had a bout of diarrhea after a trip to Mexico with my family. I remember the feeling of nausea that swept through me before my child self had surrendered to the gas pains and parked myself on the toilet for an hour, shitting until I felt like I didn't have any bones left. That was how I was feeling now, with several key differences. The pain was worse, the sense of an impending bowel movements was so formidable it gave me temporary amnesia, and it took all of my willpower, all of it, to clench my bottom cheeks together to prevent my sphincter from exploding. A sudden shock of pain racked my body, and I half wondered if I was going to give birth to a Tasmanian devil. The crazy, fever-induced rage.
You fucked it up, you dickhead. Get it well. Cracking jaws, Gromit.
A sudden shock of pain racked my body, and I half wondered if I was going to give birth to a Tasmanian devil. The crazy, fever-induced image of said cartoon animal chasing Bugs Bunny through the...
Hang on, you haven't done the other bit, you fucking twat. Start again from the top, you wanker. Fuck's sake, it's not like this when you download an audio book, is it?
As a child, I had a bout of diarrhea after a trip to Mexico with my family. I remember the feeling of nausea that swept through me before my child self had surrendered to the gas pains and parked myself on the toilet for an hour, shitting until I felt like I didn't have any bones left. That was how I was feeling now, with several key differences. The pain was worse. The sense of an impending bowel movement was so formidable it gave me temporary amnesia, and it took all of my willpower, all of it, to clench my bottom cheeks together to prevent my sphincter from exploding. A sudden shock of pain racked my body, and I half wondered if I was going to give birth to a Tasmanian devil. The crazy, fever-induced image of said cartoon animal chasing Bugs Bunny through the splashy, volcanic shit kettle that was my stomach caused me to elicit a short, maniacal bark of laughter as I approached the metal detector.
Help me.
A wild, distant look in my eyes, sweat now beginning to pour off me like a long-distance runner in Kenya. The security agent on the other side of the deck.
You fucking fucked it up again, you twat. Start again, you wanker.
The security agent on the other side of the detector shot a quick glance over to her Kerwick.
You fucking balled it up again, you fucking mean. Do it properly. I'm fucking trying.
The security agent on the other side of the detector shot a quick glance over to her co-worker, who narrowed his eyes and made a subtle movement towards his holster. My breathing became uneven as I entered the metal detector, and I realized with alarm that I had taken off my socks without even registering it. And one of my shirt tails was untucked at the front. I held my breath, my eyes bulging dangerously from my head as the machine scanned me. As I shakily moved forwards towards the agent for a pat-down, my stomach began to elicit sounds that could only be described as otherworldly. It started off a sort of bubbling sound, heard from afar, and grew in pitch and intensity at an alarming rate. My jaw dropped in shock at what I can only describe as the sound of an agonized, wailing alley cat in heat, with a persistent Doppler effect added to its voice emitted from some nether region of my intestines. The officer's eyes widened in alarm, and she kept her eyes glued to my stomach as she thoroughly patted me down. As she reached my shins...
Fucking read it properly, you twat.
As she reached my shins, I felt my innards suddenly expand and plummet towards my rectum. With cat-like reflexes, I squeezed my sphincter shut with what seemed like nanoseconds to spare, and I knew that if I didn't get to the bathroom immediately, I would shit myself. With Herculean effort and all of the strength that I could muster, I forced my bottom cheeks together, knowing that one false move would open the floodgates. I began to walk like a duck, trying to remain as inconspicuous as possible, not even caring now what other people were seeing in front of them. A disheveled, barefoot, 40-year-old businessman, red-faced and bulgy-eyed, sweating profusely, shaking slightly, and walking without bending his knees. With single-mindedly in...
You fucking do it again, you fucking wanker. I'm trying, Robert, I'm trying.
With single-minded intensity, I grabbed my carry-on, shoes and socks from out of the plastic tub that had passed the X-ray inspection, and without putting anything back on, I turned on my heels with the intention of finding the nearest restroom and slowly dying there, one squirt at a time. But that's not what happened. I turned to go and found myself staring at three armed agents who stopped me and asked if I would follow them. "Why? What's the matter?" I stammered, wincing slightly as the act of speech seemed to strain the tenuous and extremely fragile truce I had negotiated between my bowels and the tempest that raged within. "I have to go to the bathroom right now," I pleaded. "Just follow us, please," they said, leaving no room for argument. The other travellers, clearing the security check, stared with curiosity and revulsion at the spectacle unfolding before them, whispering amongst themselves and hurrying to pack their belongings and get as far away from me as possible, no doubt assuming that the airport had nabbed some sort of domestic terrorist. If I hadn't been feverishly trying to hold back the eruption of Mount Vesuvius, I likely would have died of shame. With each step I took towards the room,
"Fucking do it properly. The quicker you can do it, the quicker you can fucking go home. I know, Robert, I'm trying."
With each step I took towards the room that they ushered me into, I felt that my legs would give way. I marvelled at how strong the human will could be. I marvelled that what was essentially patching a hole in the Hoover Dam with bubblegum could actually be sustained indefinitely. Maybe I would make it through this ordeal after all. The room they'd brought me into was an examination room. I had pretty much stopped registering details of my environment as my unconsciousness closed off all but the absolutely necessary functions. Breathing, ability to walk. But I snapped back to my reality when I heard the snap of rubber. The slow dawning of realization poked through my agony and stoic resolve as I turned to face an agent donning rubber gloves. "Sir, we are going to perform a cavity search on you," a young, fresh-faced agent stated in a firm but emotionless voice. His short, cropped blonde hair was immaculate, and for a crazy moment, I wondered if he was an actor, and this was all some sort of elaborate practical joke done to amuse some bored kids watching YouTube. He must have taken my tortured silence for resistance, because he looked at me sharply and said, "Lower your pants and underwear, please, and face the desk." Panic started to grip me in its icy grasp, and the sudden adrenaline threatened to destroy my sphincter's bulwarks and rend my anus in two. I inhaled sharply, and with a pained gasp, I doubled up my efforts to clench my cheeks together. "Sir, please," I begged, deferring to this kid in an act of desperation. "I have to go to the bathroom. You can follow me into the stall if you need to, but I had some Haribo sugar-free gummy bears, and now I feel like..." But that had stopped listening.
"You fucked it up again, you twat, because you said the wrong words. Try it again." "I'm trying. I just want to go home."
"Sir, please," I begged, deferring to this kid in an act of desperation. "I have to go to the bathroom. You can follow me into the stall if you need, but I've had some bad Haribo sugar-free gummy bears, and now I feel like..." But they had stopped listening and smirked at each other. Two of the other agents, a tall, dark-haired female and a short, balding, fat man, looked away from me, and I could see them shaking a little as they stifled their laughs. "Sir, face the wall, put your hands on the desk and spread your cheeks," the young agent stated, a lopsided grin on his face. "But..." I began to protest, and then a fresh shock of pain forced me to stop and lean on the table for support as an ungodly howling rose from my stomach. Something between the dying moans of a woolly mammoth and the sounds of bubble wrap popping underwater. I exhaled shakily and my focus began to narrow as I rallied for the final battle. Shaking uncontrollably and sweat literally raining down onto the tabletop in front of me, I turned to face the wall and heard a meek childlike voice pleading from somewhere in the room. "Please," it said. and then again. Please. From somewhere within me, my mind recognized this sound had issued from me. Although my consciousness had now begun to separate from my body, and I held my breath and prayed to God for strength. He probably has some heroin or something up there that opened up, the female guard said as part of me that hadn't escaped into the ether yet acknowledged that she was behind me to my left. Probably high as a kite, look at him, she said. The shorter guard agreed with a snort. Spread your cheeks, the young agent said, his voice directly behind me and lower than the other two. And bend over. Please, God, please, God, please, God, please, God, I whispered in a desperate, maniacal mantra, not even aware of my surroundings anymore. I felt like I was lost in an opium fog with a half-snatched image and sound filtering through to create a nonsensical version of reality. Another volley of pain tore through me, and I involuntarily leaned forward over the desk. My focus completely narrowed now to a spot on the wall 2 feet in front of me. A curious imperfection in what seemed to be whitewashed stone wall. It was a dark blotch with about 5 millimeters long and shaped like a smiling bear. A yellow dancing bear. No, a green bear. No, red. It was all the colors of the rainbow, my God, and it was beautiful. It just took something as simple as a slight breeze to trigger Armageddon. That's all. No trumpets, no fanfare, no fire raining from the heavens, no dogs and cats living together in harmony, no finger on the button, no prophet to predict it, no nothing. As I stared at the rainbow bear smiling and dancing in front of me, my mouth agape, drooling eyes glazed and bloodshot face coated with a sheen of sweat, I heard the softest sound. An exhalation from the young agent behind me, and then at the same instant the warm air of his breath feather across my bottom cheeks. For just a moment, maybe less, maybe a split second, even a nanosecond, I felt the presence of God there with me in that room as neurons began to misfire at a blinding rate. Nerve endings bristled and muscles twitched reflexively. I stood on the brink with 1 foot hovering over the edge, and then, without taking a step, I found myself plummeting. With a sound like an extra-large plastic ketchup bottle being run over by a truck, my sphincter released. The pressure of the blast pushed me hard into the desk, and the legs of the desk screeched as they scraped across the floor. My body remained rigid for a moment, and I experienced a relief that can only be described as orgasmic in its purity. My eyes rolled back in my head, and my tongue lolled out of my head like a half-retarded dog, and I emitted a low, sustained groan that grew in pitch as the filthy torrent pushed its way out of my body. Tremors racked my body, and I must have looked like a fish out of water with an endless stream of shit firing out of its arse. Other sounds and sensations seemed to filter in now as my consciousness began to materialize once more. The muffled screen of a dungeon, filled with prisoners near death, radiated from my stomach. The rushing sound of liters of liquid trying to escape through an aperture too small to accommodate it all at the same time. The omnipresent sound of chunky liquid spattering against a hard surface with great force. The high-pitched screaming of a woman's voice calling out to God. Another voice sobbing uncontrollably, imploring to make it stop. And my own ecstatic monotone wail. When my ordeal had eventually been run... you fucked it up again. Just get to the end and we can fucking go on with training. I'm trying, Paul. When my ordeal had eventually run its course, I was left panting for breath and wobbly-legged, half-crying, half-laughing with relief, barely lucid and feeling as if I could have birthed an elephant. My colon felt like something had poured chili sauce all over it and then sent it in a colony of fire ants to eat it. And through my sobs, I heard the sound of dripping. Like when the sprinklers are eventually turned off after an office fire or after a thunderstorm when the willow that overhangs a pond continues to rain down long after the sky has stopped. From behind me, the sobbing continued, and I heard someone trying to speak into a walkie-talkie. But nonsensical words. All the man could speak. It sounded like the ravings of a lunatic. With great relief, I slowly pulled myself off the table, legs trembling, my stomach eliciting
you fucking done over there, you wanker? I'm trying every time. I'm trying to do it. You fuck me off, for fuck's sake. I'll do it. Just fucking do it. I am.
With great relief.
If I told you to do it properly, I fucking know, Leon.
With great relief, I slowly pulled myself off the table, legs trembling, my stomach eliciting one last sound, a loud, prolonged gasp bubbling that eerily resembled a pig orgasm. I slowly turned my head to survey the devastation, and in that instant, if I had had a pencil or some other sharp object, I probably would have gouged my eyes out in revulsion. And the smell. The smell was enough to drive a man insane.
Stop doing that and get on with it. I am a fucking...
After half a whiff of this ghoulish brine, I immediately stopped breathing through my nose, but the taste was to remain in the back of my throat for months to come. The young agent had taken the brunt of the foul witch's brew, and at first I couldn't process what I was seeing. I thought somehow the young blonde kid had been spirited away and replaced by a brown golem, or an ATV rider that had spent the better part of a day driving through every mud puddle he could find after a torrential downpour. With some degree of compartmentalization, I came to understand that for some unfathomable reason this kid hadn't moved, or hadn't been able to move, through the entire fecal deluge. He'd weathered the entire assault head-on like some sort of hero from Greek mythology. I'd given this poor bastard a one-man shit bukkake that would have made a Brazilian pornographer retch with disgust. And he was still in the same position. He must have been from the moment of the first impact. I tried to comprehend how he must be feeling, what he must be going through psychologically, but it became evident very quickly that he was broken. No doubt forced so deeply within himself, once the fire hose had been turned on, there was little to no hope of him ever coming back from it. Certainly not without the extensive psychotherapy or lobotomy needed for something like that. I looked beyond his quivering, catatonic, crouched form to see a perfect outline of him cut out on the white wall behind him. Either side filled in with a dripping, opaque layer of alternately pulpy and runny fecal stew. I noticed two quivering masses at either extremes of the room and realized they too were humanoid in form, although the catwalling that was coming from these broken creatures was just blubbering gibberish, and this was the tableau that was burnt into my mind's eye for eternity. Needless to say, I missed my flight. In fact, the next week is a complete blur. I have the vague recollections of an army of hazmat-clad figures looming through the brown landscape of the soiled room, the slopping sounds of rubber boots squelching in puddles of fetid detritus, uncontrollable wailing and animal-like sounds issuing from the mouths of creatures that have been traumatized beyond their capacity for being put back together, the complete loss of sensation from my waist down as I was rolled through the room on a waterproof gurney, its wheels struggling to surf on top of the shit-soaked floor. I spent a week or so in the hospital enclosed in a well-ventilated sealed room with a suited doctor coming in on the hour to monitor my vital signs as they tried to rehydrate my body. I had apparently expelled every available drop of water from my body that was possible to sustain...
You fucking you've done it again! You're so close to getting to the end and you fucking ruined it! I'm trying, Paul...
I spent a week or so in the hospital enclosed in a well-ventilated sealed room with a suited doctor coming in on the hour to monitor my vital signs as they tried to rehydrate my body. I had apparently expelled every available drop of water from my body that was possible to sustain life.
For fucking hell, where'd you get to that being fucking up all the time? I don't know, I'm gonna try again, sure. All right.
I spent a week or so in the hospital, enclosed in a well-ventilated sealed room with a suited doctor coming in on the hour to monitor my vital signs as they tried to rehydrate my body. I had apparently expelled every available drop of water from my body that was possible to sustain life without for a short period of time.
It doesn't make any sense of eating it, but I fucking know.
I spent a week or so in the hospital, enclosed in a well-ventilated sealed room with a suited doctor coming in on the hour to monitor my vital signs as they tried to rehydrate my body. I had apparently expelled every available drop of water from my body that was possible to sustain life without for a short period of time. All of my clothes were incinerated in the hospital's crematorium, and the soiled bag of Haribo sugar-free gummy bears was never recovered. This is my story. It is inconceivable to think that this kind of project...
Why do you keep fucking it up when you're so close to finishing it? I don't know. I don't fucking know, do I?
It is inconceivable to think that this kind of product can be sold legally and be misrepresented as food. I was lucky. I survived. But as for the families of the survivors and the survivors themselves, they will forever live with the trauma of the events that took place at Pearson International Airport on the snowy day in April 2013. This is a genuine review posted on the Amazon website, entitled Hell Has No Surprises For Me Anymore. And you can see the original post on the Amazon website, which I've just mentioned. I took this reading from DearCustomerRelations.com website, where you can read this and many more, many, many, many more pleasurable letters of complaint. If you think this is shit, just blame the Demon Seed podcast.
Last October, in the quiet Mississippi town of Pascagoula, two local men confronted authorities with a rather bizarre story. Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker told of a strange craft landing near their fishing site and of being taken aboard by three unearthly creatures. The two men were questioned under hypnosis and lie detectors, but their story remained intact. One of the men suffered a nervous breakdown and is still under treatment. Among the skeptics were Ralph and Judy Blum, already at work on a UFO book. With W5 last week, Ralph and Judy returned to Pascagoula.
Judy and I stumbled into this book. It came to us to be written. Suddenly, we were in a wave of waves. UFOs were being seen across the country again. We were in what they call a flap. And people began experiencing things that they couldn't explain. Something was happening in our skies, in the midst of Watergate, Agnew, the energy crisis, the Middle East. Something was happening and people couldn't understand what it was. We spoke about UFOs, but nobody really knew. And then it hit right here where we are. It hit Pascagoula. Charlie Hickson entered the news and we had a book to write.
We were sitting on the other side of the pier with our feet, you know, over toward the river, fishing in the river. And the fish still wasn't biting, so I told Calvin, I said, well, you know, we might as well go home. But I guess that was when I heard it. It was some kind of zipping sound. And when I turned all around, in this area out here, about 40 or 50 feet out there, there was some kind of craft, you know, it was like it's gonna come right onto the ground. But it came on down and hovered about a foot and a half or 2 feet off of the ground. We didn't know what to do, you know, the river behind us and that out there, not knowing what it was. So, and then before we had time to really do anything, it seemed like an opening appeared. Toward the end, it was, you know, toward us. And the blue light, it had blue flashing lights as it was, you know, approaching the ground, but then they went out. And when the opening appeared, some source of light came from the inside. It was just almost blinding.
Sheriff Diamond, can you tell me just what happened that night?
No, sir, I can't. All I can tell you is there was two men came into the sheriff's department approximately 8:30 and 9 o'clock. They were all excited and upset. Wanted to climb the walls, hysterical, crying. That's actually all I know is what happened. As far as me seeing what happened, I don't know.
And of course, we could see them in the opening coming from, you know, when it started out to crack. But
did you
I couldn't
think it
tell.
Was people coming out at first?
Well, I kind of thought it was people at first, you know, off like that. But of course, when they appeared there in front of me, it was the most shock I've ever had in my life.
What did you see?
Well, they were shorter than me. I'd say about 5'2" or 5'3", and they didn't have a neck. The head, it seemed to come directly to their shoulders. And it had something that came out to a point about where a nose would be, and on each side, the ears. And I believe that they looked like they were a little longer on the ears than the nose.
But still pointed the ears.
They were still pointing, yes.
But since I was down there, and since I was a physician, and several other scientists and investigators were asked to consult and look into the situation, I was asked if would I mind if I would be present, and I said I wouldn't mind at all. And while it is still very difficult for us to believe that a spaceship landed and that robot-type creatures came out and actually took these two people into the spaceship, these men, in my opinion, believe that they saw this and that they were being honest in reporting what they have reported.
But it seemed to me when they came out that doorway, or that opening, or whatever it was, then just almost instantly they were right there on us. And their arms, they had arms, and I saw the arm moving here and in the shoulders. But they had welved, I mean, their fingers were welved, and then they had something like a thumb, and they were like this.
Mm-hmm. We questioned them at length, and that we left the room and recorded all the conversation they had, recorded between the two of them. And one of them kept wanting to pray. And he said, after all I went through on this earth, he said, why should I have to see something like this?
Calvin Parker, I was questioning him. And at one time, he wanted to climb the wall. That's how nervous and how shook up he was.
They had me one on this arm like this, and on the other one, you know, they had my other arm like that. And I just seemed to lift up to the same height they were off the ground, and we just moved into the craft.
Now, inside, how did they lay you out? Do you remember how it happened?
I didn't see any tables or chairs or anything in there. I'm not saying it wasn't in there because the light was almost blinding, but I didn't see any. And when they carried me inside, they seemed to just lean me back, you know. And this eye, well, I keep referring to it as an eye, and it moved up to in front of me about this close. And it started right at my eyes, looking me right in the eye. Uh-huh. And it seemed it hesitated there for a few seconds, and it just started moving over my entire body. When they brought me from the craft along this area here, and they seemed to, they didn't drop me, you know, they just released me back to the ground, and I fell. I don't know why my legs were weak, I don't know why it was the fright or what it was, but I fell onto the ground, and that's when I seen Calvin. He's standing right over here in this area, and he was standing facing the river with his arms outstretched like that, just like he was staring at something.
Tell me about the lie detector test.
Well, so that was run by Pilkington. Was it Pilkington?
Pennington.
Pennington.
That they run this type of test about six times a day. And when they were asked to come over here to talk to these people, they had in their mind that it was just a big joke. And if I understand it correctly, they ran one test on Mr. Hickson. The machine showed that he was telling the truth. Then they run another one. And then the examiner, he began to wonder himself. So he ran the third test, and he believed just what Mr. Hickson had told him.
Mr. Booth, tell me what happened that night in October.
Well, I got up and turned off the TV and come to the front door, which you can see right behind me. Just as usual, checking to see if it was locked. So I looked out the window at the top, and naturally I saw this object above the streetlight out there. So naturally it caught my eye where the lights was on. Couldn't hear any racket or anything. So I opened the door after a few seconds to step out to see if I could really tell what it was, and just took off.
Can you describe it?
Well, it was round. Had lights all the way around it, turning in a counterclockwise motion. Had a dome on top with a bright light shining out through the top of it. To tell the actual figure of it or anything, you couldn't tell. You could just see the lights and the one on top.
When it happened to Charlie, the creatures, whatever they were, didn't communicate with him. Now, it's enough to say you saw a UFO to give you trouble these days in some towns. To be taken aboard is just a suspect idea. But somehow, if the creatures don't give you a message, you're just a touch less incredible. And Charlie says, what he said and what we wrote about in the book, It was like they had a job to do and they came and they did it.
I think there has to be a reason why that Calvin and me was picked.
Maybe because you could take it.
Well, it might be. I don't know. I think that they know more of what's going on down here on this earth than we think. And I don't know. They might have been, you might say, looking for somebody that could, you might say, hold up under the strain and convince people that there is another world and there's some kind of life on that world.
Paranormal existence.
You mean to say you came here purposely?
The first move in the great conspiracy had been made.